G'day, Groovers. Welcome to another instalment of the U Project. Tiffany Ann Cook. Hello.
Craig Anthony Harper, how are you?
I'm good. I thought let's just start rolling because you were just banging on about how amazing you felt. tell us why you feel, or what's your theory on why? I will say your skin looks amazing today.
Ooh.
When that could have something to do with what you just said. So tell everyone what you were just telling me and what you're doing that's different.
Well, there's some small things, but the biggest thing, the last few days, I've just been smashing water because I think my water intake had really dwindled down low. And so I've been smashing water, and I got up this morning, I did a morning boxing class, and my performance in that was better, my energy's good, and I'm feeling really good. I'm just not feeling tired and lethargic.
I reckon water is it's almost the most underrated, maybe the most underrated health variable. We all know that sleep's crucial, and we all know that, you know, managing stress, and we all know nutrition, and we all know move your body. We get that. But it's like the easiest thing to, like the fucking no-brainer of the group is the thing that people don't do because they don't feel thirsty, so they don't drink.
So I've been drinking so much water, and then I feel thirsty as soon as I wake up in the morning. I feel thirsty because my big thing when I'm drinking enough water is always one big glass in the morning. If I have that, I'll do it all day. If I don't have that, I won't. That's just how it rolls. And I'm waking up with that thirst that you don't always get when you're just dehydrated all the time.
Yeah.
And it stops from eating shit too. Snacking on stuff.
Yeah. It is a bit of an appetite manager or suppressant, but you know, because you're putting something in your tummy, but also, and people are sick of me banging out fucking numbers and stuff, but it's true. So 70% of your body, give or take, is water. 90% of your brain is water. 90% of your blood is water. Even, what is it? I think maybe 30% of your skeleton. I mean, so as soon as you, as soon as say 83, 85 kilo me is a bit dehydrated, then, and because I'm not heavy, I'm not light, I'm kind of in the middle, but I need a fair bit of water or fluid. It depends. It doesn't have to be water from the tap. It can be fruit. It can be a diet that's high in water content, but not many people, I mean, some, of course, vegetarians tend to have a higher water content diet than carnivores. But you still need, I mean, even if you're getting most of your water in inverted commas or hydration through food, you need a fucking lot of veggies and a lot, and I mean a lot. Now, and the other thing, and this wasn't what we were going to talk about, but it might open the door into that anyway. The other thing is to realize that, you know, there are so many variables around hydration. How much do you move today? How much do you sweat today? Are you working in an air-conditioned environment? How hot is it? You know, how humid is it? You know, what's your core body temperature, blah, blah. There are so many things that kind of vary the requirements that we have in terms of hydration day to day. So, you know, to simplify it, you might need, now whether or not it's actually glasses of water or glasses of water through food, but you might need 10 glasses today and 12 tomorrow and 8 the day after based on what you're doing. And also the other thing is if you and I do the same workout today and we sit, you know, you're sitting at desk one and I'm sitting at desk two. And when I get up, you get up and we do everything the same. I'm still going to need probably 20 or 30% more water than you because I'm 20 or 30% heavier. So just being bigger and heavier means you need more water because you've got to hydrate more mass. So the old arbitrary, and I mean, this is actually, interestingly, a nice segue into what I wanted to talk about. But, you know, the idea that there is a best number of glasses of water or there is a best amount of calories is kind of silly when we really understand how hydration and how nutrition and how energy management and balance works for humans. But so what prompted that?
I've been looking a lot at performance and the things I do and the habits I have and the lack of routine that sometimes my working life brings. And I'm just trying to bring all of that back. When I'm competing in boxing, when you've got a structure that's really important around that stuff, you make it happen. And I said to you the other day, like, I'll go from being burnt out, tired, extremely tired, collapse on the couch, drop dead. And the moment I'm feeling amazing, I'm sitting there going, am I training hard enough? I should be putting more in. I should be performing harder. I should do more training sessions. I should do sparring sessions. And then I'm being really critical about it. But I'm not having the consistency to put any of that into place because obviously there's things that I'm just not doing consistently, like water intake, like how I'm structuring my meals and how I'm structuring my downtime and my energy.
You know, yeah, it's so interesting.
And it's driven a lot by, you would know, I'm currently midway through one of Stephen Kotler's books, The Art of Impossible, and oh my God, I love it so much. But it's all about our neurobiology, and that, I mean, one of the first things he talks about is physical exercise. If we don't put the stuff into our body, we can't have creative ideas. We can't have ambition and drive. Like all of these stages of, I mean, it could be business or personal or whatever, but all these stages we go through are an amalgamation of these neurochemicals. And they're not present if we don't get our body functioning right.
Yeah, well, they're not present to the levels that are optimal, that is for sure. And yeah, you're right. You're exactly right. I mean, the thing is that we all want to function optimally, whatever that means. And for me, that just means me in my 57-year-old body with the genetics I have and the time and the resources and the training background and all that stuff. I just want to be me, you know, optimal me, whatever that is, you know, best thinking, best habits, behaviors, best physiology, best, you know, health state, best functional movement, all of that kind of stuff. And it's, you know, one of the challenges for us is that we kind of get trained and told and taught and programmed in a way via media and social media, intentionally and unintentionally, that there is a single best way to do X, Y, Z, to create this. Oh, you want to be lean? This is the best way. Or you want to be fit, this is the best way. You want to sleep optimally, this is the best way. You want to stay optimally hydrated, this is the best number of, you know, glasses or whatever of water. So, and look, there are some, we've spoken about this before, there are some guidelines which are reasonable, you know, but even when we talk about things like recommended daily intakes, which we've spoken about a little bit, I mean, a recommended daily intake is an arbitrary number that is created by, was created by some researchers, and there's lots of different RTIs that they vary country to country. And even, you know, within the same country, depending on which model that you look at, which will go, oh, well, Tiff's a 37-year-old lady and she weighs X and she's, her activity level is generally, you know, medium to high and blah, blah, blah. And then therefore you need this number of calories. And here's the number, you know, which is ridiculous because at very best it's a guide. And it's okay to go, look, that's a bit of a stab in the dark based on typical, the average, and that's good. What that does is it gives us a bit of a guide. But when people don't use it as a bit of a guide and rather they use it as some absolute metric or some absolute kind of unequivocal number that needs to be adhered to, at best, they're going to have spasmodic results because your number, in inverted commas, whether that's hours of sleep, whether that's calories in your body, whether that's micros and macros, fat, protein, carbohydrate, you know, vitamins, minerals, you know, all of those requirements vary day to day based on a range of fucking things and not just what you do, but where your body is at in terms of the cycles of the body, male and female, not just females have cycles, so do dudes, you know, and our body varies, you know, month to month, week to week, day to day, depending on, you know, a range of things. And also our in, and you know this with your pH 360 stuff, it's like nothing is a constant, you know, everything is dynamic in the human body. And there are things that are consistent, but there's nothing that's in a state of absolute static kind of like pattern hold, you know, everything's changing. And so, look, I guess what I wanted to talk about today was I just wanted to open the door, and we're not going to, I don't really want to tell people, you know, this is what you should do and this is what you shouldn't do, but I just wanted to introduce the idea of paying attention to our body and paying attention to our results and paying attention to, like you did, your energy. Like, your energy was shit and you felt a bit average. And one thing that you've noticed is that you've increased your water, or one thing you did intentionally, and now you feel great. Right. Now, does A equal B? Maybe. Are there a few other things involved as well as the water? Who knows? But what is identifiable is that you changed one significant thing, and now you notice a change in how you feel emotionally and cognitively. Your brain's 90% water. Well, that makes sense. And your energy levels, that's dependent on hydration as well. And by the way, when you're dehydrated, your heart rate goes up because your body's got to pump more blood to deliver the same amount of oxygen. So your heart rate's up and your blood is thicker because you've got less volume of water. And now your blood pressure's up as well. And when your blood pressure's up and your heart rate's up, then your fucking anxiety is up. Mm-hmm. When your anxiety is up, everything is shit. And you go, oh, fucking hell. So literally being well hydrated could change the way that I experience my day. And that's, people go, oh, surely it's not, it's that fucking simple. It's that simple if your problem is dehydration.
And most people, to a degree, don't drink enough water.
Yeah. Well,
I don't reckon.
You know, it's like, it's pretty much the easiest thing to monitor. Just look at your wee. if it's clearish, we'll fucking giddy up. Just carry on.
Have you got like one of those Dual X paint charts? Have you got one of the little wee charts to make sure
you? Me and my wee are very familiar.
I mean, just because you're into data and you know, tracking things, I thought you might just have a strip on your bathroom wall.
You know
wall.
What? It's like, yeah, no, I don't, but I could. I might create a wee chart for the masses.
Can we sell them? We could brand that. We could create that.
Yeah, the Craig Harper or the You Project wee chart. What I'd have to do though to produce such a chart is. I was going to say film myself. I won't say film myself. I'd say take some snaps of my wee in various states of hydration or dehydration, and we could create a hydration scale. I'm sure there is one. I'm sure this thing that we're talking about, has already been created.
Yeah, but guess what? We can call it the Youth Project Wee Project.
You're a fucking idiot. The You Project, We Project. Yeah, well, send us in your don't send us anything. Or if you do, send it to Tiff. Tiffany and Co. Send it there. Send it. Don't bloody send it to me. I get sent enough weirdness. Fucking hell.
Oh, dear.
He says as he has a cup of tea. But one bit of advice, like, this is a no-brainer for people who, like, a lot of, I think dudes are worse than ladies at this. I'm not sure why. And I'm generalizing. Some guys are great at it. Some ladies are probably terrible at it. But one of the things that I do is I have a bunch. I always have, don't ask me why, I've got four bottles in my fridge, which I rotate, 2.5 liters and 2 1-liters. But I literally, one of them, the one I drink out of most of, it's a 1 liter bottle with the measurements down the side. And my rock bottom is 3 of those a day. And it's not that I need 3 liters or 2.8 liters or 3.4 liters every day. It's just that for me, around that number seems to be pretty good. So if it's the end of the day and I go, wow, I haven't even finished my first bottle yet, then I 100% know I'm dehydrated, right? And so the thing is that, you know, we have all these great ideas about, I'm going to do this, I'm going to change that, I'm going to eat more of this, I'm going to do less of that, and then it's fucking Friday and we can't even remember that conversation where we made all of these, you know, incredible commitments to do these things that we never actually follow through on. So, you know, and that's why, you know, for some things, accountability is paramount, and to have something like a 1 liter bottle where once you finish that bottle, you go fill it up again. You know, just having half a glass here and half a glass there, not the same because it's harder to track.
Yeah.
And so... That's why I like being scientific, even, you know, individually. Let's all kind of track stuff. Let's figure stuff out. That's where some of these apps come in.
Yeah, I was going to say it's just an easy win. And once you get that, like the first thing I did, you tick it off because you've done it. And you're like, all right, I'm doing that. Then you get a result from it. I feel great. And now my brain's like, oh, what's another thing that I can do that's better? Like, and then I start looking for ways to look after myself. What's the next thing I can implement? Because that's great. And you just got all those feel goods.
100%. And this process of, or this principle of, well, let's try this and let's see what happens. That is very methodical. That is very strategic. That is very intelligent. Rather than going, oh, some bloke on Channel 9 said I should do this, so that's what I'm doing. And maybe the bloke on Channel 9's got some insight. That's cool. Then rather than go, this is what I'm doing, you could say, okay, so he or she spoke about this idea of, you know, putting half a lemon in my water every time I have water because it does this to my alkalinity or whatever, right? So cool. Do that for 10 days and but do it every day and do it the same way every day so that you're actually getting a measure of what is or what isn't working or changing or effective. Because what we tend to do is we do something for 10 minutes or 2 days and go, oh, fuck, it didn't work. Well, you don't know. Like you have to, or my training partner, the crab, who's simultaneously smart and stupid. No, he's not really, but he does. What he does is he will change four things at once, right? And he goes, oh, I'm feeling amazing. I go, well, what are you doing? He goes, oh, well, I've started doing this and I've stopped doing that and I've started doing this other thing and I'm doing that as well. I go, well, which is it that's making you feel amazing? Because I guarantee you it's not all of it. So a really, you know, like a very fundamental principle of science is change one variable at a time. And even if you do 7 days where you go, like, for example, you know, a practical example is, okay, I'm going to give up all liquid calories for 7 days. So I'm not going to drink anything that has a calorie. So no dairy, no soft drink, no fruit juice, no smoothies, nothing. So my options are water or black coffee or black tea or herbal tea or something like that, preferably not artificially sweetened soft drinks, even though they're calorie-less, you know, they're not healthy. But just like there's a no-brainer. And when you think that people have, again, bro science, you know, generalizing, but on a typical day, and I definitely don't overeat or overconsume, but on a typical day, I would have... let's say I have three coffees and let's say I have almond milk on my breakfast in the morning. And, you know, I probably have 500 or 600 calories a day of liquid and I don't have much. Like I don't drink alcohol. I don't do smoothies. I don't even do protein drinks anymore. You know, I have the odd one, but a lot of people without even being aware have 1,000 calories a day beside their food. Beside their food. Think about that. You go, that's 1,000 calories in a month. That's give or take 30,000 calories. Now, that's on top of what I eat.
And like my BMR for my size, my BMR is, I think, 1,400 for what my body. So it's two-thirds of what my body requires to function for the whole day.
Yeah. So when we talk about BMR, just to explain, not to you, Tiff, just to our listeners. So BMR is basal metabolic rate, which is essentially how many calories or how much energy or kilojoules your body needs to kind of just exist through the day before we chuck training and running and jumping and lifting on top of that. So that's exactly right. So your BMR is 1400. And for people who are chugging, and you think about people who have lots of coffee or lots of beer or lots of wine or lots of soft drink, that could be 2,000 calories a day.
Or a peanut butter smoothie.
And a peanut butter. Well, I mean, you know, one of the biggest selling, I won't even say because I've said it a few times and I don't want to get in trouble, but it's true. One of the biggest selling smoothies at a very well-known chain has something like 70 grams, might be more, 70 grams of sugar, which is 14 teaspoons of sugar, and around 600 calories, and people line up because they think they're buying something healthy because it's at a kind of a juice bar-y thing. And that's, you know, again, that's essentially a meal. Firstly, that's a meal. Secondly, it's not a good meal because it's fucking incredibly high in sugar.
You raise a really good point because I get a lot of networking breakfasts, and the amount of people that will look at a menu and sit next to me and go, I'm going to have the Bircher because it's healthy, and it's likely well in excess of 1,000 calories, loaded with sugar and juice and crap, but they're making this decision. And I'm not one for counting calories at all, but I am one for doing it enough to have an understanding when you look at a food and you understand what is in it, that you would know that that bowl of Bircher, the enormous bowl of Bircher in front of you, is a whole day's worth of food, and it's not a healthy choice.
No. But it, I mean, that's all about marketing and perception. You know, if you want a healthy, I mean, you know, take everything out but leave the oats. There you go.
Yeah.
Take all the rest out, have the oats. Take all the sugar out, take the honey, take the, you know, or maybe some fruit and some oats with maybe some almond milk or something like that. But I mean, at the same time, you know, Bircher muesli tastes fucking amazing. But the reason it tastes fucking amazing is because it's essentially you're having sweets for breakfast. It's like you're having a dessert for breakfast.
I sold, after the boxing class that I took last night, one of the participants come up and bought two, not one, but two Powerades, as he does after every class. And as I hand it to him, I'm like, dude, that's got 35 grams of sugar per bottle. You're about to have 70 grams of sugar. The flaw in that moment, though, Harps, was I just had popped a piece of chocolate in my mouth. So I was like, oh.
But you know what? a piece of chocolate post-training is better than even one sports drink because a piece of chocolate, depending on the size, of course, but if you're talking about, you know, like 5 or 10 grams of chocolate, 10 grams of chocolate might have 3 or 4 grams of sugar. But one of those drinks has 35 grams of sugar. That's 7 teaspoons. That person has two. And again, there's no judgment in this. There's just awareness. But the thing is that you can't, you know, like the reason people buy sports drinks is because the marketing is fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
If you really want some sugar post-training, eat an orange, eat a banana. Definitely you need to replenish your glycogen stores, which is the energy stored in your muscle and your liver, you know, and, you know, it to an extent fuels your brain. You know, you need it, and it's okay to eat sugar sometimes, but the right kind of sugar, the right amount at the right time. Just chugging down on essentially, you know, you know, sugar that's in a blue drink, for fuck's sake. I mean, surely that's a trigger. Surely that's a sign. Dude, it's blue. What the fuck is healthy that's blue other than the ocean? Fuck, and you don't want to drink that either. So, you know, I mean, I think also we can extrapolate this idea of, you know, what's my body telling me and what works optimally for me across to, you know, like you and I have spoken about, if we take this same thinking and we go, let's take it away from the body and health, let's take it away to another component of our existence and look at career or look at job or look at income or creativity or passion. So, you know, things go in cycles, as we spoke earlier. And there is, I think there's a, for a lot of people, like you've been in fitness for quite a while. I was in fitness for fucking ever. And you love fitness and you love training, and I love fitness and training, but there's a time where you go, yeah, but now I'm doing this thing. And it's not that the other thing's bad. It's just that I'm a bit different and I've evolved. And the thing that used to really stimulate me, I'm not talking about you, I'm talking about me. You know, there was a time when I was on the gym floor and I was excited and pumped because I'm 18, I'm 19, I'm writing gym programs, I'm working in an environment that I love, it's social, I'm learning, I'm teaching people how to lift shit, I'm learning how to communicate and lead, and I'm learning how to navigate kind of all these social interactions, and I'm getting better and I'm becoming a boss now and I'm fucking, you know, there's all this great shit. And then 4 or 5 years down the track, you're like, all right, well, now I'm 23 and I've written 1,000 or 2,000 programs. I've had 9,000 conversations and I've been getting up at 4:30 forever. And maybe there's a different way I can do this. And then you're 30 and now something different works. And, you know, the thing is that what will work for you? So finding the best job or finding the best diet or finding the best operating system for a marriage, it's a work in progress. Because what blew my socks off when I was 25 might bore me senseless now, or it might actually piss me off because I don't enjoy it anymore. And it's not that it's bad. It's not a bad job. It's just that that's not who I am anymore. And so this notion of finding the thing and then sticking with the thing, for a lot of people, that won't work. For some people, they'll become an apprentice, whatever, fill in the blank, carpenter, then they'll become a chippy, and they'll do that for 40 years, and they love it because they love working in that space. They love working with their hands. They love knocking off at 5 and having the weekend off or whatever, and that's not good or bad. That's individual, and it's awesome. Just like most people definitely don't want to do my job because I have no work care. I have no holiday pay. I have no sick pay. I have no insurance in the sense that I don't know how much money I'll make in the next year because I'm dependent on people booking me to speak. I'm dependent on things working out. I don't have a boss. I don't have all of the security that most Australians who are in a job have. But for me, that is brilliant. For a lot of people, that would be shit, right? But also, I don't have a lot of the pressure and I don't have a lot of the responsibilities that a lot of people my age have because I don't have kids and I don't have a wife. And so whether that's lucky or that's unlucky, that's, you know, personal judgment, I guess. But for me, you know, the fact that there's so much uncertainty is the thing that excites me.
Mm.
And for a lot of people, that would be the thing that terrifies them. You know, for me, having to do the same job for 40 years or a version of the same job with very little flexibility or chance of progression or change, that would terrify me. So it's learning to navigate these situations. And, you know, like, I think it's important that we listen to people. Just like I say to people, listen to this podcast if you like. Consider what we say. And if it sounds, as I've said 1,000 times, sounds crap, ignore it. If there's something in it, try. Like, stop drinking, you know, calorie laden stuff for a month or a week. Try. If you don't want to, don't. But if, see what happens. You know, have a different conversation. See what happens. You know, stop eating white bread. See what happens.
Mm.
You know, start a side hustle. See what happens. Here's the thing. I mean, you're not going to spend $1 million setting up your side hustle. You might register a business name. You might try a few things. You might fuck up. Because about this time, about a year ago, you went, fuck, I wonder how podcasting works. And now you're working with me. You're producing this show, which is amazing. You've got your own show, which is amazing. You're getting guests from all over the world. You've got sponsors. You're building brand. You're building relationship. But a year ago, you were doing none of that. And now your life is exponentially different, not because you followed some six-step plan or you read an article or you did a course that told you how to do this, but you went, you just opened the door and started experimenting. And now 1 year down the track, you're further progressed than I was at the same stage. And also you have knowledge and skill that I don't have. And so, and you're learning, and yes, it's great because you've got this career that's growing and you're making a few bucks and you're doing some good shit, but you're also excited.
Yeah. It's been, like, I think of my jumping into the PT world from the corporate space, and that was, I don't know, 5 years ago, feels like a lifetime ago, but it has been just a nonstop process of trying new things. Like, I didn't jump in and start and go, this is it, I'm living euphoria. I loved it, but I went, I've got to figure out how to do this better for me. I've got to figure out, and I was just evolving it. And I tried online coaching and I did retreats in Thailand and I had little business partnerships with people and I did joint ventures with them along the way. And some of them worked and some of them didn't. And, you know, there was these equal parts of, oh, I love this, but it's also really hard. It's in some respects, it's way harder than it was having a job, but I'm going to keep finding a way. And like when I started the podcast, well, now that's my, like, you know, when you land on the thing and everything kind of changes, but there's been, it doesn't happen overnight. And you've kind of, if you want to find it, you've got to be willing to open a lot of doors and just know that you're learning things along the way that will come back for you.
And yeah. And I mean, that comes down to, you know, this is high level science, comes down to trying stuff, try stuff, try it, try something, see what happens. I mean, okay, here's full disclosure. You know this. So about, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago, the U Project, we were sitting at about 185,000 listens per 30 days. Then for some reason, it dropped down. And then about 4 weeks ago, we hit like 145, which was the lowest we've been for, I don't know, 2 years or I'm like, what's going on? And there's sometimes there's no rhyme or reason. So I went, you know, we chatted, Melissa and I chatted, we all chatted. And I said, why don't we do a few shorter episodes? So still long enough, you know, like this one will probably end up being 40 minutes or so, but maybe less of the hour and a quarter, hour and a half ones. Let's try and put up one every day for a while and just see what happens. And in literally in 3 weeks, our numbers have gone up to tonight. It'll be about 200,000 in the last 30 day period. And I think, and it's not just about that, but it's about the process and it's about trying stuff. But and we could be, I reckon, what are we now? I reckon by, you know, maybe August, September, we could be doing 250,000 listens per month. And of course, that's not all that matters. But when you have a project or a process or a business, well, the numbers matter in that. That tells you what's working. Well, the numbers tell me what's working. Just like, of course, your blood pressure numbers matter because those numbers tell us how your blood pressure is. Of course, the number between your toes on the scales matter, not as much as a lot of people think, by the way, but they matter. And of course, the profit and loss matters. And so we're not obsessed with numbers, but numbers are KPIs and they tell us, look, what I love about numbers and data, you know, is that it tells us this thing's working, this thing's not working, right? And then there's also the other data, which is when I do this way, I feel good. Like you, that's data, that's feedback, that's information. You know, when I drink more water, well, right now I feel fucking ace. And that's really the only thing I've changed. When I drink less water, I feel shit. And so, you know, this is stepping out of the idea that there is a generic way to do anything because there really isn't.
I think there's a lot of people that don't try things before they seek the answers from or complain that they don't have the answers. The amount of people that have reached out to me that have had a podcast for a long time and they're going, I don't know how to get the numbers. How are you doing it? And I'm like, well, I've tried a lot of, I haven't really thought about it yet. Like I've tried a lot of things. I've done a lot of stuff. But they're coming to me for the blue pill or the red pill. Like they want the answer. I'm like, but have you changed the way you do things? Have you tried things? Tell me what you've done first.
Sorry. Yeah. Oh, and also, I mean, you hustle, you know, you do 4 or 5 episodes a week and then you do another bunch of episodes with me and you're always promoting it. You're always writing copy and you're always putting up little Insta things and Facebook things and you're getting great guests and you have an ability to write good copy. You're cheeky, you're good at engaging, at developing rapport, you know, and you don't stop. You know, you don't stop, you do it. It's like, I don't stop. I've said many times, I'm not brilliant or clever, but I'm fucking persistent. You know, I'm stubborn. It's like, I will just keep going if I want to, I will just keep going till I find a way. And if perchance I do my very best and I fail, I'm okay with that. But I know that I can communicate. I know that I have some thoughts and ideas that can resonate with people. I've done radio. I understand what it is to talk to a big audience. I've done television. I'm used to performing under pressure. And now I just need to figure out, which we've been figuring out, how to do this thing called a podcast. And there are different kinds. There's Joe Rogan, that's 3 hours. There's How I Built This, which is highly produced with sound effects and cutaways and intros and outros. And, you know, and then there's, you know, really deep sciencey ones that have a niche market. And so you're just trying to figure out, how do I do this thing? And whether this thing, in inverted commas, is find the right diet or find the right formula for a podcast, the truth is that the answer is in the results. The answer is in the action. The answer is in, you know, the data. And in, you know, so with a podcast, for example, it might be numbers. With a new diet that you're on, it might be, my energy is through the roof. That's the data.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the person that's come into your life, the new relationship, you know, that might be, well, fuck, this is the one, or maybe this is the one, because the only change in my life is this person, and I feel happy and calm and content and joyful and safe and valued and, you know, seen. I feel, and you go, well, fuck, that is amazing.
Mm.
You know, I mean, we can have metrics in relationships. They don't have to be numbers, but it might just be, are you happier? Like I always say, my litmus test for relationships or friendships are, is my life better with this person in it? That's my test. I go, that's it. That's my metric. If the answer is no, then I'm probably going to figure out a way to kind of just shut that down, you know, because like what's the, if, and we all know, for example, that some people stay in relationships. I'm not talking about romantic necessarily, but I mean, this is a part of the human process and journey and experience. And the reason that they stay in them is because they just go, oh, fuck, it's going to be messy to, oh, she's a pain in the ass, or he's a pain in the ass, or I don't really enjoy spending time with them, or, but, you know, oh, fuck, it's not worth it because my parents know their parents. And then 5 years later, you're still spending time with this person that's toxic.
Mm.
You're still having these fucking ridiculous, pointless, circular conversations about the same shit. And every time you see that person, you're like, oh, fuck, you really want to avoid it. But whereas if you had made a decision 5 years ago, a hard decision, and followed through, it's okay. And it's not that they're a terrible person or you're a great person. It's just recognizing, okay, so this relationship, I'm talking about the optional ones, not the ones that aren't optional. But, you know, this is not, I don't love it. It's not healthy. It's not, you know, do I want to invest time and energy into this relationship? And sometimes the answer is no, and that's completely okay.
I was having a conversation yesterday with a person, and they work in a government, like I think it's like a psych hospital, government based. So they're working with a lot of youth as well.
Yeah,
and a lot of really highly drug addicted, personality disorders, sociopaths, psychopaths. Really heavy stuff. And the stories that this person was telling me, like it shocked me, but the thing I was thinking of was, I could never work in a job like that because, and it's, this is my value, I value and I have a huge emphasis on the impact that the people around me have on me. Because in my life, it's been true. When I'm around certain types of people, I'll have a certain energy and my life will either be better or worse very visibly. And I just thought, this person is going into work to see these things, live these things, be treated in a certain way, and they're inside that environment. And that just, I just thought the effects of that, that like even scientifically, like they cannot be good.
No. Well, spending time around people that cause you anxiety is probably more toxic than a bad diet. It's almost definitely more toxic than a bad diet. And again, these are, you know, that's a comparison. That's a bro science comparison. But what we know is, you know, if you're around people that you love or people that you connect with or people that inspire you or people that value or appreciate you or embrace you, your physiology is different mm-hmm. to when you're in an environment where you get the opposite. Now, that's not a theory. That's a fucking fact. Because when you're in a room of people that you don't love or that maybe are a hard work or don't like you or are critical of you, then you're spending half the day switching on your sympathetic nervous system and, you know, to kick that bloody tiger away from the edge of the cave, and you're constantly in a state of kind of endocrine system disrepair, you know, where you're pumping out adrenaline and cortisol, et cetera. And you are putting yourself in your body in a state that doesn't work over the long term versus if you are in an environment or around people that create the opposite impact for you, then you have a very different experience. And everything from your cognitive function and your experience of work, how productive you are, your communication, right through to your immune system is impacted. Everything. And this is one thing we don't think about so much when, you know, when I say we, I'm talking about as a culture and society, when you read stuff in the, you know, the weekend lift out in the papers, it's always around, you know, some diet plan or some new fucking herb or why sleep matters or how to de-stress things like, is your workplace a toxic environment? And how the fuck does that affect your body and your health and your emotional and mental health and your nervous system and your immune system and your energy levels? And like, some people are actually anxious before they get out of bed thinking about going to work. Well, then when that's a pretty regular occurrence, there's your data. There's your data. And some people will say, and I get it, yeah, but I can't just stop. I get that too. But here's what else I know. You know, someone like Johnny that I've been working with for 3.5 years, he can't just walk. But so we start in the fucking wheelchair and we train in the wheelchair for months and then we start crawling a year later. And now 3.5 years later, after training nonstop and still being in pain, the other day he, for the first time in 3.5 years, first time he walked down the stairs and up the stairs with his stick. What's my point? My point is sometimes the process is long and fucking hard. And no, you can't magically jump out of that situation on Monday, but maybe you can open the door and start the journey on Monday. And maybe it'll be painstaking and maybe it'll be long, but either way, in 3.5 years, or 4 years or 1 year or whatever the time is, you're still going to be doing something. It's going to be doing the thing you hate or closer to the thing that you love. Mm-hmm. And so what we don't do, you know, that old famous saying, every 1,000-mile journey begins with a single step. A lot of people stand at the start of that 1,000-mile journey and look ahead and go, fuck that, I'll start Monday. And then they're 50, right? And this is the thing, is that our willingness and our ability to embrace slow.
Took me 3 years to wedge myself into Team Harps and Melissa, and look at me now. That was a 3-year journey.
Yeah, but even with you, you're impatient with your show though.
I know.
You're impatient. Yep. Like I've said to you, because I know your numbers and I know our numbers, right? And I think sometimes what you do is you look at our numbers and go, fuck, right? Not that you're unhappy for us, right? But what you don't understand is you've come in with, and I mean this respectfully, with no public profile, right?
Yeah.
No public profile other than your friends and clients. Nobody knew who the fuck you were. Now you've got a bit of a profile. Now you've got people in probably 30 different countries who know who you are. Now you've got people around the world who talk about your podcast and connect with you, right? Mm. Like your learning curve and your connection curve has been steep. And most people, you know, most people who started what you did 1 year ago, my guess, most would have stopped.
Mm-hmm.
That's my guess. I could be wrong. I think more than half would have thrown in the towel. They either would be doing podcasts very irregularly, if at all, or not at all. And there would be very few people who have maintained the rage the way that you have and worked relentlessly and tirelessly to build this thing. And as you said, to wedge yourself into the U project, you haven't wedged, you're definitely an asset for us. So it's definitely win-win. But the beauty of, and I don't mean this to sound in any way egotistical or silly, but if I were you, that's what I would be doing too. Because hang out with someone who's ahead of you. Mm. Hang out with someone who's got more knowledge or experience than you. I definitely don't have more talent than you. But what I have is I have more runs on the board. I'm old as fuck. I've done a lot of things you haven't done. And so when you hang out with that person, and I'm the same, like we interviewed yesterday morning, who will be up Sunday. I'm not sure when that is in context to this pod, but Mark Randolph, who's about, I think about 5 years older than me, who started Netflix. So, and I'm talking to this dude who started Netflix, as were you. And I was like a fucking kid in a candy shop because I'm talking to this man who's done so much incredible shit. And not only just from a business point of view, but from a how do I optimize my life? Like his philosophy. Now talk about figuring out your own blueprint. He invests about, obviously he's with his wife and he got married in 1987, still happily married. Like for me, I'm like, that is fucker. That's 34 years, right? That's quite rare, especially for someone who's a fucking billionaire and high profile, right? Three kids. His time and energy is divided a third into family, a third into work, and a third into adventure, right? And all of those things somehow involve his family anyway. But I thought, and here's this dude that we're talking to who's this absolute killer who only works 2 days a week. He only works 2 days a week. But what he's done is he hasn't built an amazing business. Well, he has, but what he's done moreover, he's built an amazing operating system that works for him.
Mm.
And also, by the way, he's done a bunch and continues to do a bunch of good for not-for-profits. Like he does all this other shit that he doesn't get paid for, where he's generating money and interest and attention for all of these amazing programs that serve the world. I was looking at that guy and I'm like, I want to hang out with him. I even said to him on the podcast, or maybe it was after, I said, I want to be your friend. Like, I want to be your friend because you inspire the shit out of me.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. It's like we can, and it's not about, you know, Netflix is interesting, but Netflix is just a, you know, it's interesting because we all know what it is.
Mm.
But I was much more impressed with the dude than I was what he did with Netflix, although that's a great story. But I'm like, yeah, but, you know, like I've met a lot of famous people and I've interviewed a lot of famous people and, you know, hung out with quite a few. There's not that many that I go, yeah, I would want to spend lots of time with you.
Mm.
You know, I don't mean that to be arrogant or disrespectful, but I'm like, yeah. But that dude, I'm like, wow, I've never met anyone, maybe I have, but I haven't met too many, no one that springs to mind that are more down to earth and grounded, who you could understand if he was a bit up himself.
Mm, yeah.
You know, was that your experience?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, but you're going, I mean, the bottom line is you're going all right. And this is, I mean, this is the thing, folks. Like we're just, you know, we're all for trying stuff. We're also, you know, and there's no best and whether or not, you know, your best operating system for work is a 9-to-5 job for 40 years. That's awesome. That works for you. That is what you should do. And how we know what is the optimal for us, like you go, how do I know what's the best whatever for me, the best diet or the best job or the best program for this or that? How you know is by the results. When you do that work, when you go to that job every day, how do you feel? I feel good. I love where I work. I love my work colleagues. I love what I do. Guess what? Don't change. Guess what? You're clever. Guess what? It's working. You know, of course, you're going to have moments and days and peaks and troughs just like I do and just like Tiff does, like everyone does. But if for the most part, the thing that you do doesn't feel like a fucking job that you're just surviving, then you're in a pretty small group and keep doing it. If you're somewhere in the middle of the scale where you're like, you know, sometimes it sucks, sometimes it's okay, but I don't love it. Well, that's not a bad thing either. But maybe you can figure out, well, what would make it more enjoyable for me? Maybe that's option one. How could I enjoy it more? How could I fall in love with it? Could I change the way that I do it? I know a lot of people who are doing their office job from home now, and they're like, I like work 50% more because I don't have to go to work. I don't need to sit in the car for an hour each way. I've got 10 extra hours. I can work in bare feet. I'm more productive. I literally get up from my desk and I go lie on the couch and eat my lunch or whatever, you know, but for some people that's worse. But it's all about what's the impact on your mental and emotional health. You know, that's going to tell you what's optimal for you. So I think sometimes, in conclusion, boys and girls, I think sometimes the best plan is no plan. You know, there might be an overarching kind of focus, like I want to find my best job or my best whatever. But having a 12-step non-negotiable plan doesn't always work. I'm all for planning and strategy, but I'm also for adaptability and flexibility in the execution of that plan. The end. The end, Tiffany Ann Cook.
Boom. Well done, Craig Anthony Harper.
Well, let's just leave everyone with that. How long have we been chatting?
About 50 minutes, I believe.
I tell you what, I can bang on, can't I?
Well, I just glanced at the clock before and couldn't believe it. It felt like 5 minutes.
So it's nearly 4 o'clock. What are you going to do?
I've got a couple of, I'm coaching an epigenetics group tonight, their second session. So I can't wait to see what they've discovered, which is on point with this conversation, isn't it?
It certainly is. Are you going to put this up on your podcast?
Oh, I think I might. I might.
I'll think about it.
I think my listeners will love it.
All you roll with the punches, folks. G'day. Hey, you know what I did today? We should probably cut this out, but fuck it, I'm going to say it. I inquired about you Project beanies.
Oh, yes.
So I've got the wheels turning. Black beanies with white and aqua logo on the black. Obviously, I need to get a sample, but I'm a little bit excited. And we're thinking about giving all the profit, which it's not going to be $1 million, but well, we're not thinking about it. We're going to give the profit to a charity. So, you know,
which
we'll cover
charity,
costs.
Harps? Which charity?
I don't know. That's
what's so close to your heart?
Well, I mean, you know, here's my thing, right? I support a couple of things already, but I care about how much of the money actually gets to the people or the cause, you know, that whether it's animals. I love animals. I can't watch animals hurt. Kills me. Can't watch kids. I can't watch. It fucking kills me. So whether or not, or it's for, you know, women who are in the middle of domestic violence or whatever. So I'm not going to ask people to send me suggestions because I'll get 1,000, but we will figure it out. So please don't, respectfully, don't send me suggestions. We'll figure it out. But yeah, then we're going to, and it won't be, you know, but it might be, fuck, I don't know, $5 or $8 per beanie, that whatever we sell, all the profit will go to that cause. So I'm excited about, you know, a little kind of doing something good on top of.
I might do that with my merch.
Yeah, I think it's
a good
idea.
I just printed a bunch of merch for people and I think I might pick a charity too because there's not much money in it.
Well, you know.
Like I was just doing it at cost, so.
What I like about, because remember I used to have a screen printing business, right? So I'd get, you know, selling garments and colors and sizes and styles and ladies and men's and fucking, you know, they're just too many variables. And then you've got stock, you've got to, you know, but the beauty of beanies is like, there's one color, there's one design, there's one size, the end. Oh, yeah. Do you have it in a beige? Nah. Do they come in 12 sizes? Nah. Have you got a head? Yep, it'll fit on your head.
When I first had Tiffany & Co. and I had my branding done up, I ordered all this merch, hoodies, boys, girls, T-shirts, hoodies, singlets, everything. And the more you ordered online, the bigger discount you got. And so I ordered heaps, so I got the big discount. And then it came from overseas and I got slammed with like a $600 customs bill to get it through and didn't make any money.
Well, I mean, you don't do it to make money. You do it because it promotes your business or your brand. You know, if you want to make money from merch, then just actually start a clothing line. But, you know, there are very few people who have businesses that end up with T-shirts or hoodies or whatever that make significant money from that. Because, like, let's be honest, you're really just wearing an ad around. You're like, you're just advertising someone's business. And I'm well aware of that, even with the U Project beanies. Coming soon in black and black. There'll be charcoal, there'll be schwarz, there'll be black, there'll be dark, 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 dark grey, and also there'll be black. So your choice of colours. All right, everyone, love your guts. Tiff, thank you.
Thanks, Haps.